I'm going to share with you a project started last year, got 2 years of data now in five locations, fertilizing cotton with N, P, and K by yield goal. I'm not sure any of the surrounding states around Georgia have the yield goal concept, and it, believe it or not, gets to be a little controversial. So I think they think we're all going way too high and polluting the environment, but I don't necessarily think that's true. But to give you a little background on the cotton, when I started in Tifton in 1994, we had one nitrogen recommendation for one yield goal, 60 pounds of N for 750 pound of lint. And you got to remember, this is right after it came out of boll weevil eradication, but before transgenics. And all of a sudden, our growers, three-bale cotton wasn't real common. All of a sudden, it became a lot more common. And I really give a lot of credit to the county agents. I was a new specialist at the time, and they said, you know, we're really not sure the 60-pound N is working for these guys making three-bale cotton. So we did some on-farm research and some experiment research. And the real, I'll admit to you, the focus was on N, a little bit on K, and not so much on phosphorus. But we upped those nitrogen recommendations from that 750-pound lint. We added 1,000, 1,250, and 1,500. And you can see we went up in 15-pound increments. Now, again, I don't think that's huge. In fact, I believe my predecessor, before I started working on this, and it was almost based on removal, if you will. But we did confirm that this worked, especially with the nitrogen side. You can tell how old these slides are. Wayne, that's a scan of a 35-millimeter slides. Just showed my age probably too. But anyway, and the P and K was similar. Of course, it depends on where you start in your soil. The lower you start, the bigger the difference is in between the yield goals as far as how much P. And, of course, they come together when you start getting high soil test P, and we don't recommend any fertilizer anymore. But you can see. So they're not huge differences. You got to keep that in mind. That's the phosphorus, and this is the potassium recommendations. So, okay, we have these on the books. We tested those, but this was around, I don't remember the exact year, it was probably about 2000. So here we are, you know, I had started doing some checking our yield goal recommendations for corn, which I got some really good curves, and I thought, well, maybe we need to revisit on cotton. So last 2 years, I had five locations, RDC Pivot in Tifton, Sunbelt Expo in Moultrie, Stripling Irrigation Park in Camilla, a Lang Farm in Tifton, and Attapulgus, which is in the southwest corner of the state. The RDC Pivot site and Lang Farm are Tifton soils. Sunbelt Expo and Attapulgus are what we call Dothan, so a little sandier. And the Stripling Irrigation Park is the one that stands out. It's pretty much a deep sand. That's why we do our irrigation work at that location. You see the rest of the details. These were all center pivot irrigated, Delta Pine 1646. We wanted to keep the variety the same, all locations in both years. And we also went up to, we went above three bale. Even our recommendation stopped at three bale. We went actually as high as four bale with the recommendations. This is what the treatments look like. All the sites were medium testing P and K, so we were able to go with pretty much the same rates. And you got to remember, this is N, P, and K together, so we can't really separate out the effects of just N versus P or K or et cetera. This is together because that's how the recommendations are. But you'll notice going from 750 to the four bale cotton 2000, your nitrogen range is from 30 to 105. The reason you're 30 and not 60 at 750 because all the sites were following peanuts. Look at the phosphorus. It only goes from 50 to 70 from the lowest recommendation to the highest, and then K goes from 80 to 120. So that gives you kind of the range of where we're talking about with N, P, and K. While we're at it, you can see the increases in the steps, and it's a little funny how either the P recommendation when it kicks in or not, but 15 pounds of N, maybe 10 pounds of P when it kicks in, or 10 pounds of K2O. And it affects the price a little between steps, and we're going to concentrate on what happens between each half bale step as we recommend. You can see how we put the fertilizer out. We put 5, 10, 15 rainbow as a base for our base nitrogen, our base P and K. Then we adjusted the K, or the P was 0.460, the potassium, urea, potash. And then for side dressing, we use Amidas, which is a urea ammonium sulfate homogenized prill. It's 5.5% sulfur, so they also balance the sulfur out. And those prices of the increase for each step, again, not huge increases between each step, and the price of fertilizer based on 2017 is roughly $9, $10, or $12, depending on which step you're talking about. I wasn't sure what to expect with this data. I didn't think I'd see a whole lot of response compared to something like corn. But this kind of surprised me a little bit. I guess the two things that surprised me was, number one, you know, irrigated land. We'd like to make all three bell everywhere, but we didn't. So I guess it's just like farming. And the other thing is the shape of the curves. I thought they were going to be a lot flatter than this. And there's more shape to those curves than it looks like because the scale's so high. But if you look at, I kind of list them as kind of the highest yielding environment to the lowest. And this is in 2017. RDC pivots, good tifting soil, good rotation, made up above three bale on the high end. Expo was the next, right around three bale. And then Stripley Irrigation Park is the line, purple line in the middle. It was a really one that stood out to me. It's got a real linear response right in the center of it, I assume because of deep sands. And then Lang Farm this year, we had a white fly issue that really knocked our yields back. And then the Atapogas site, we planted and got washed out and had to replant late and just never really recovered. So I thought it was kind of interesting. Now, I should make regression curves, and I didn't put the stats on here because it gets really messy. We can do that eventually. I will tell you that not every step is significantly different from each other, but a lot of them on the low, especially the low versus the high ends are of each curve. But what you can do, and I'll spend just a couple, a minute or so explaining this one because this will set up for what the other curves look like we're going to look at. But if you take RDC pivot from 2017, and if you start on the left-hand side, going between a bale and a half to two bale, we made 295 more pounds of lint, okay? At 70 cents, I just used the figure 70 cents, that'd be worth $206. Again, that step cost $9.10 worth of fertilizer, so the bottom line is the bottom line, and I'm not an economist, and I can get some help with economists when we really look at this, but the way I look at it is we spent $9 to make $206. That's a pretty good return, $196 worth. I think everybody would take that, all right? But if you go to each step, the next step kind of flattened out for some reason. You only made $20. Then we had another little jump in the middle, and then this is one of the only ones that when we got above our recommendation of three bale, we started backing up and losing money. We actually lost lint, and then that cost us not only the lint we lost, but also then the cost of fertilizer on top of it. So that's how I kind of see it. And you could, if you wanted to, for example, if you've, you know, thought about fertilizing for two bale and then went for three, you'd have to add the steps in between. You know what I'm getting at. But I think it's an interesting way to look at this time data. So we'll run through the first year by site, and then we'll start averaging things. But at the next highest yield environment was this one, the Expo. And, again, it's not a great response curve per se. And we had that little dip in the middle, but you see the numbers there. And then Stripling was the interesting one. Look at that range between 12, going from 1250 to 1750 yield goal recommendations. You add those two together, you're talking over, what, almost 600 pounds of lint and about $400 worth in that. It was the only site that really did that and had that real linear in the middle. I'm not sure exactly why, except for, again, being a deep sand. And we still didn't taper off at the top end like we can if we get really too high in nitrogen. This one's a little messy. That was the Lang Farm. That's the one that was hit by white flies, and it probably a lot of variability got us there, so it's a little crazy. Again, that one step in the middle. And then here's another one that had kind of a linear spot in the middle at Atapogas, but look at the range you are in yields now. You're down, you're talking between 400 and 700 pound of lint. You're in the lower end of the range. If you average those together, the curve looks like this. Again, I'm not sure what's going on between 1,000 and 1,250. That might be a physiological reason. I don't know. Maybe it's got enough fertility to put on vegetative and can't fill the bowls out. I'm not sure. I'll talk to my plant physiologist, but it's kind of interesting on a five-year average it stands out like that. If you do that little exercise like we just did on the five-year average for 2017, this is what it looks like. And again, on average in that year, you can see that once we got up above and trying to fertilize more than 3.5 bale, it wasn't economical to do that. I've already been accused of promoting for fertilizing for 4 bale, and that's not exactly what we're doing, but we are. When farmers ask me, hey, I've got some spots in my fields I can make 4 bale, do I need more fertilizer? It's my job to go and try to confirm that and see where we need to be. So, decided it'd be a good idea to repeat the study in 2018. And this is what the graphs look like. Now, as you know, we had an unusual year. We started planting. We had the RDC and Expo sites planted early May. Then we got 2 weeks of rain. Took another week out to get back in. So Stripling, Lang, and Adipogus were all June planted cotton. And then if you notice on this graph where Stripling it zeroed out, it got totally wiped out by the hurricane. My first research plots in 25 years I've ever lost to weather like that. But it got wiped out. We were able to harvest the RDC and Expo sites before the hurricane. And then Lang Farm weathered the storm in Tifton. Late planted, had leaves on it when the hurricane, but still was affected. Adipogus, we harvested about a week before Christmas. And we're lucky to get it out then. We almost stuck the picker. I think George Valita showed this already. That was a significant event with the hurricane coming up through Georgia. It was still a category, at least one when it hit Adipogus. It was interesting. We didn't lose Adipogus, even though it was in the corner of the state, but we lost. And I can show you where the sites are. Adipogus is down there in the southwest corner. Tifton, of course, is east of Albany. Moultrie is between Albany and Valdosta, if you will. That's what Stripling looked like. George Valita showed this picture, too. It was on the ground. We thought maybe we could pick it up. He tried. By the time I got in there, it rained on it, and you couldn't even get it out. It was already germinated, so it wasn't worth picking up. So it's just zeroed out. But there's the four-year average for 2018. Almost looks linear. There's the numbers if you do for the four-site average there. And then I'll finish with showing you now the nine. I wish it was 10. But there's your nine location average for yields and with the economics on it. And you can see that we're definitely seeing yield increases. The scary part about this, in my opinion, is that, you know, despite the wide range, we're seeing good yield increase to MP and K. We can't separate out MP and K. But even when you fertilize for a higher yield goal, even though you didn't meet that yield goal, a lot of times the increase in yield does cover the cost of the increase in fertilizer. Because, again, we're not talking huge amounts, $10 between each step. So that makes me wonder, you know, well, growers are just going to automatically fertilize everything for three bale, even when, you know, some situations they can't make it. That's a concern. And then the other concern, obviously, is environmental. But, you know, as long as you're getting more yield, as you put on a little more fertilizer, you feel good about that cotton's getting some of that, and we shouldn't be polluting, and we need to look into that. But, again, it's not huge increases. So we're probably going to do this again. I want to get that Stripling site another good year on the yield goal there. And I don't think it's going to change recommendations much per se. And if we ever decide to go to four bale recommendations, I think we'll have some data. So I'll finish with that. Thank you. Thank you. Good. Time. Time for questions. Yeah. Hey, Forbes. That's okay. Yeah, so, and these were all medium sites, but in the Expo 1 year, I had some what we considered low testing soils, and our upper range, if I remember right, I used to have it on tip, I used to know it real well. I don't think we met more than about 140 pounds of K2O. Now, private labs will go almost twice that, but we were about, if I remember right, about 150. Audrey might remember. Yeah, yeah. 140. You know, we like them to be in a good medium range, need in there around maybe 90 or 100 pounds of K2O and roll on, is what we would prefer. Good question. Yeah. On which one? I don't even incorporate my pre-plant because everything's put out by hand, by plot, so it's really hard to incorporate after you put it out like that. So, so I applied, we plant the cotton. We actually plant the cotton. Most of them were conventional till, plant the cotton and spread all the fertilizer by hand, including the 5, 10, 15 at planting. And then definitely the Amidus is applied by broadcast and non-incorporated. Got to remember we're irrigated. And between irrigation and rain, it gets incorporated pretty good. Yeah. We get pretty damn good infiltration, yeah. Great question. I've been playing with it, and that's my next thing on corn I'm looking at, and tissue samples and all that. But I don't even remember. I got one every this far, I'm good. Whatever that is, it's standard. It's not on the high end or the low end. So, yeah. Hey, Ty. To adjust in the middle. Yeah, see, we already recommend adjusting or notching in quarter or third at planting and the rest at side dress. And then even if my opinion, the way to adjust if you're coming up short was foliar. I mean, foliar and feed grade urea works pretty good for us as long as you don't do it too late. So, and I know George talked about fertigate and all that, and that makes me a little nervous because you don't have room like you do with corn. I don't like to put nitrogen on the ground after third week of bloom. And I like to have my nitrogen out there beforehand, to be honest with you. So dropping in, and, you know, I like to side dress before, you know, not past first bloom. And once you get past that, if you think all of a sudden you're coming up short and got a good yield potential, I'd probably recommend just trying to hit it with some foliar. That's what I would do. Yeah, that's a good question. Especially after third week of bloom. David Wright did that work in Florida, showed after third week of bloom, you don't get good nitrogen for us in our part of the world. After third week of bloom, nitrogen on the ground. All right, thanks.